Welcome to the Real-Time Analytics Podcast. Why wait? The rise of real-time analytics hosted by Rockset. We invite engineering, data thought leaders, and analytics specialists to talk about their world, providing insights into what your peers are doing to improve data and application analytics. I'm your host, Gio Tropiano of Rockset. And before I introduce our guests today, if you do have a question or a comment, please drop us a line at community.rockset.com or tweet at us at Rockset Cloud. If you find today's conversation helpful or insightful, please subscribe and share with any comments that you may have. We have an awesome crew for today's discussion. My co-hosts today are Nadine Farah, Rockset's Senior Development Advocate, and Daniel Liu, Rockset's Director of Product Marketing. Thank you so much for being with us. This episode's guest is Ben Robajon, also known as the Seattle Data Guy. Ben is a data solutions consultant helping his clients improve their data infrastructure. He specializes in data science and data engineering, was previously a data engineer at Facebook and Healthentic, and also has a weekly newsletter, seattledataguy.substack.com. Check that out. He's a longtime friend of Rockset's and has written articles for us that can be found on rockset.com, actually. Ben, welcome to the podcast, and we're happy to have you with us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you all. Thank you, Nadine. Thank you, Daniel, and everyone else who's here joining.
Absolutely. Ben, I'd love to hear from you. I want to hear, since you've been, you've gotten your hands dirty and now you're helping a lot of companies. How has the data landscape evolved over the past 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot, obviously, that has changed, a lot that has stayed the same, right? Like, to me, it's always interesting how much those are both kind of same. I think the biggest change that I've noticed personally is, a lot more consumption-based tools, which has allowed, I think, a lot of other companies at different sizes, especially around along the SMB side, to kind of come in and start like looking at their data more, right? You don't need a $300,000 license with, one of the bigger like ETL tools or data pipeline tools. You can pay, $50,000 or $40,000 a year for maybe something that's a little more, consumption-based. So I think that's something that's been interesting, right? That's both on the data warehouse side, on the ELT side or ETL side. I think that's what I've kind of felt has changed. I think that's why, like, as a consultant, I've noticed a lot more work kind of come up because, a lot more people are trying to dive in into the space. And I think that's kind of what a lot of that is connected to. It's just the accessibility becoming, just more there from a pricing standpoint.
So let's talk about hype then, right? We can talk about data trends, and which data trends would you consider to be overhyped? And why?
Yeah, I think the one hard thing for me to answer that question is just because it's always going to land on where a company is at personally in their data journey, right? Like, what might be an overhyped concept for one company might be, where they're at in their maturity level for another company, right? Machine learning is great if you've got your data in order, if you've got, decent pipelines developed on the back end that develop a strong infrastructure that you can rely on, but it's not great for a company that's just getting started out, right? Like, then it's like you're paying attention to what companies are doing that are basically flying rockets, and you're over here trying to figure out how to walk. So I think that's generally where a lot of hype comes in, is like the problems that you need to solve are, you're reading an article and you think that's the problem you need to solve, but you're just looking at something that might not answer your need. I think a lot of companies, like, you look at FANGs and they're all doing a lot of cool things, but depending on which FANG you're at, you might be doing different work. And depending on what team you're at, you're doing different work. Netflix has switched a lot of their workloads into more streaming kind of processing, but at Facebook, we were doing plenty of batch processing. And that just comes down to what problem are you trying to solve? And you're focusing less on like the tool you're using. It's like, what problem are we solving? Okay, we just need this report once a day, once a week. Okay, that's a different problem versus, Netflix that was like, okay, our data is getting too big, or it's going to take too long to process. Let's do this live, things like that. So I think that's generally where I view like hype. It's like, it's always going to be different on a company basis. Everyone's kind of in different stages, and setting up your infrastructure, I think setting up like solid data infrastructure is always kind of step one. Everything else after that is hype for you if you don't have that. And then after that, you know, you can start building off that, start looking for specific use cases for what you need as a company. And I think that's usually where how I feel about like hype in particular.
And I wanted to come in and quickly ask, you mentioned that a lot of companies may not be at the maturity that they need in order to take advantage of some of these data trends. Is there a specific data trend or two that a lot of people have a lot of excitement about that you've been hearing a ton about that may not be overhyped per se, but they're just a lot of excitement and interest and maybe a lot of searches coming to your website or YouTube videos about that people are just super curious about?
Sure. I mean, I guess I would say that like things like, again, machine learning and streaming are both interesting aspects and use cases that people want to do more. I mean, like I remember when I interviewed at Facebook, even I like was like, they asked me like, well, what do you, I think they asked like what I wanted to work on or what I was excited to learn at Facebook. And I think I talked about like distributed computing and streaming. And the interviewer ended up asking, you know, like, well, what are some of the downsides to kind of some of these solutions and trying to implement them? And I think that what he was reaching for was essentially that, they often take a lot of maintenance or a lot of extra work, or if you don't abstract it correctly, it takes a lot of extra effort. So, you know, things like machine learning, streaming, all these things, when they have a framework around it that makes it easy to utilize and easy to maintain, are great. But when they don't, just become a massive pain for any company to manage, and a lot of the big tech companies have solutions to solve this in terms of like, yeah, you want to do some sort of A/B testing or machine learning or, you know, and have all the infrastructure around it. Oh, you just have to really develop the model. And then, you know, you push it to this one place and it already has all the infrastructure around it. And then you don't have to worry about that. So I think things like that, people are definitely hyped about it. They're interested about it. They're trying to figure out how to do it. But you know, there's definitely a lot of gaps, in terms of like getting to that end result, and effectively. So, yeah.
I have a question for you, Ben. You create a lot of content for those new to the data engineering space. What is some advice for folks new to the data engineering that you can get? Like maybe like top three.
That's a broad question. So any advice? Like are we trying to get career? Are we trying to get like tools? I guess be curious where.
Let's say like one career and two tooling.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of career, I think, you know, breaking into data engineering is always hard. And I think, you know, if you're trying to break into data engineering, the best advice I'd say is, you know, don't get too stuck on either a company or working even as a data engineer start. You know, there's plenty of other roles that are adjacent to data engineering that, you know, you can then, you know, parallel into more of a data engineer role. I often tell people that like, to some extent, obviously titles matter, but to some extent, you know, just make sure you're doing the work behind the title is often very important. So if you can work as a data analyst and start doing data engineering work, it's much more likely that you can pivot into data engineering either at your next company or maybe the next time, you know, you're talking to a different manager inside of a larger company. So I think that's kind of advice there. In terms of tooling, I think, I guess even there, it's like, well, what kind of advice? I mean, my usual advice is, you know, pick the tooling that makes sense for the project. Understand that, like, you know, if you need to manage 1,000 pipelines, you're going to need very different tooling than two pipelines, right? Those are two different solutions, two different really problems. In order to scale 1,000 pipelines, whatever infrastructure you pick is unavoidably going to take, you know, almost just one person to manage the infrastructure component alone. Even if you pick some more of the managed services out there, there's just likely things that are going to go wrong, and then one person to develop on at a minimum, if not, you know, possibly more. Whereas, you know, with two pipelines, maybe you can get away with, you know, still doing something like cron and a Python script if that's your only need and you know, you don't have a bigger use case, you know, then setting up all this extra infrastructure, it's great, but, you know, again, requires a certain amount of overhead regardless. So, you know, trying to pick the right solution for the right problem, I think, is always important. And, you know, I think the other advice is, you know, try to avoid the shiny new thing too much. A lot of problems can be solved by a lot of basics in data engineering first, and then, you know, as problems evolve, that's when you start seeing the need for new tooling. Once you have a use case, you've well developed it, you've, you know, implemented a solution that you can rely on, then you often can like look in, see like, can I improve this? Can I make it better? I think like, again, there's like an article about Netflix and how they kind of had to do that with their like OLAP to streaming kind of process, where they realized, oh, okay, what we currently have is going to not work within like 6 months to a year. We need to switch. And so then they kind of push into more of a switch. And so, you know, I think that's what most companies do. It's like you do something, you make sure it works, it's solid. And then eventually, okay, we see it's not going to work for X reason. Now it's time to switch. But, you know, chasing the hype just for the next tool without actually having a need is one, very expensive on a company for multiple reasons, right? Whatever that tool is going to cost, whatever that the re-engineering, all of it's going to be very expensive. So, you know, oftentimes it's better to see like, hey, make sure that this tool works. And then, you know, if you have a more, if the use case is growing or whatever, then you can kind of expand upon it, right? The whole MVP to more final solution kind of process.
And that's super interesting. Are there any tools that you think most data engineers should be at least considering or looking at, if not implementing? I know there's, you know, again, that maturity curve that you mentioned, where step one is pretty basic and getting your house in order before you want to start going after the shiny new things. But are there, I don't want to call them shiny new things, but are there tools that you're thinking, oh, not a lot of people know about this or have a false understanding of what they actually do and the power they have. And maybe you should do a little bit more digging here.
I don't know if there's any specific tools that I would say aren't necessarily recognized. I think what's interesting to me in like the data engineering space is, now that I've been in it for longer, I think I have a broader understanding of what exists. But like, you know, even when like I was coming up, like I think I originally started with like SSIS more for like automated jobs, didn't really realize that was connected to ETLs, just realized this moves data from one point to another. Eventually the next company I worked at did like PowerShell, and like and they kind of had developed their own framework around that and to manage a lot of the SQL and stored procedures that were in the data warehouse. And then from there, like I learned more about Airflow and kind of just progressed through that. I think it's sometimes that natural progression, just because, you know, depending on the company you start at, you're going to see a different set of tooling. You know, I think if you're just starting out, Airflow is still, I think, a great place to start. You're going to find a lot of problems. You're going to find a lot of issues. But then, you know, once you find all those problems, all those issues, you also find that there's a bigger community around them, which helps solve some of those problems. And then I think it gives you more of an insight into maybe picking a different tool. Like if you really don't like Airflow, there's at least, you know, 3 to 4 other, at this point, newer solutions that are kind of coming into the space, trying to approach a lot of the problems that, you know, Airflow has. I think that's kind of a great place to start, though, because it's going to teach you a lot about, like, I think the what we're trying to do, like the basic concepts like scheduling, dependencies, and all these more complex concepts that like kind of expand out, that, you know, when you first start, if you're only doing something on cron and some Python scripts or some PowerShell scripts, you know, you're not necessarily thinking about dependencies in the same way. You're having to think about it very manually versus very programmatically. So that's why I think I usually say people can start there, and it's usually fine. Data warehouse, you know, I'm pretty like open to most. You know, I've built data warehouses on Snowflake, Postgres, BigQuery, and a half dozen other tools. So I'm not too keen towards one or the other. At this point, it just is going to depend on, you know, what your use cases are, how your team is being supported, and what processes you're going to develop, because any of those tools can be like basically what's the word I'm looking for, almost like become just a place to lay data, put data, and not really become a data warehouse. And so at the end of the day, it's going to be less about tools and more about like best practices and processes you put in place. So yeah, that's how I look at that.
Yeah, I love that. I actually just was watching your video about Snowflake recently. It was a really good introduction on what it is. I think there's a lot of curiosity and interest in the tool, which is great. What are your thoughts around, I like to dig a little bit deeper into data warehouses, and you know, you said you had a lot of experience with Snowflake and others. What are your thoughts around Snowflake? You know, the pros and the cons, who's it good for, maybe some limitations of the technology?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Snowflake, I think, usually fits really well for people who, you know, maybe don't have a huge technical team to manage every aspect of their data warehouse. You know, the I think the downside to a lot of tools that make our lives easier is that we maybe forget about process. We maybe forget about best practices because it's just like, oh, let me just, you know, put whatever data here into, you know, my raw data layer. And then there's no real thought about how it actually gets modeled or processed from there. And I was actually just reading an article this morning. It was just more of like a quick, like five paragraphs from Bill Inman, where he was doing like a little snowflake critique. And that was kind of his point. And I think it's kind of accurate. Is it's very easy to just kind of dump data into Snowflake and then kind of just have your own little siloed data sets still, right? Like there's no real connection between different data sets. And that's that I think always generally comes more into the process side of things. Like, okay, well, we're putting this data here, but where, you know, how are we going to connect it all? All these other discussions that you would have had to have prior and or planned out a little more. You know, that's more around process than it is around tool, though, to me. You know, it's more just like some tools are just so easy to use. You know, you combine that with Fivetran or something like that, that, you know, process becomes secondary because it's just like, oh, we got the data here. We can answer we can answer our very like siloed set of questions. Like maybe it's just on my HR data, but like then once you start asking questions like, okay, what about my HR data versus my operations data? You're going to start finding issues that things don't connect and things don't, you know, there's no magic, you know, pill to fix that. You know, there's certain tools that can manage certain portions of that, like customer CDP type tools can kind of manage that side of it. But then internally, how do you manage all of this? And that was something that I think I was I was spoiled at with Facebook, was like everything is so integrated that there's always some key that connects every system. There's always something, like, so you can get away with treating things more like what people kind of call a data mesh, because there is some way to connect everything at the end of the day. And I don't think a lot of companies have that, because in order to do that, you have to basically develop the software itself and in turn develop the processes around that software. So yeah, I mean, like Snowflake's not going to fix that, right? Like it's that's going to come down to people. That's going to come down to processes more than it comes down to technology.
So if you could warn or educate your audience about one thing when building data apps, what would that be and why? And maybe it could be something that you've learned as you grew as a data engineer and a consultant.
Sure. I mean, by data apps, do you mean like dashboards, like applications that are kind of built off of?
Embedded analytics and operational analytics.
Sure. I mean, I guess like first, if we're just talking about more about dashboards, I always like to help people try to keep logic as much in one place as possible. Right? There's a lot of different places you can put business logic or layer in all of that, and the more you push it into multiple places, the harder it becomes to track what happens to data. Obviously, there's trade-offs for that as well, but the more you can kind of shove it into one place, the easier it is to QA, the easier it is to manage. Obviously there's some niceties to having, you know, raw data or more raw data that, you know, analysts can work with, and then process and then create, you know, further layers from there. But, it's also a great way of getting inaccurate data very quickly as people slice and dice in multiple different ways, as they're building systems. Trying to think more on like operational analytics. I mean, there's some similarities there where it's like, you know, making sure you're processing the place or processing, whatever analytics or you know, segmentation or something like that in one place is often great just for QA. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I would add to that. Any advice? Yeah, I think that's kind of my general advice. I'm sure there's other people who maybe speak a little deeper on it, but I think that's my general advice there.
Makes sense. I mean, and you have such history and a lot of experience doing consulting, Ben. I mean, you run into a lot of different problems. And also just being a data engineer at, you know, Facebook and others. I'm curious, like, what are some of the pain points that you've encountered, whether it's building data pipelines or whatnot? I mean, you mentioned a little bit about understanding the process and making sure you got that figured out, but I'm trying to think about our audience who are perhaps building out some of their data architecture right now, and they're looking at you and you're too busy to help them because they've reached out and you don't have the time quite yet. Like, what are some things that you might recommend to them as a starting point or some easy pitfalls that you think people should be looking at?
Yeah, I think there, you know, more starting on like pain points and talking about pain points that I've seen with customers. I think generally what I've seen there, like one of the probably the main reasons I end up getting, you know, pinged is due to the fact that maybe things were built in the past, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and then whatever team built it is no longer there, and right, like it's been hobbling along for the last 2 years, year or something, and you know, no one really fully understands what's going on. Maybe it's kind of producing what they want, maybe it's not producing anything that they want, and you know, then I kind of have to come in and kind of play this reverse engineering doctor, and for better or worse, try to fix as much as I can. There's a lot of untangling of systems. And I think generally my recommendation to most people is try to build as simple as possible as you start, you know, like just build a flow that works, make sure, you know, the data is accurate, make sure you like, you know, don't go crazy early on, you know, pick your few use cases that you really want to build out, you know, build those out, build the, again, like I said, like a process that you rely on where it's like, okay, if I want to get data from point A to point B, here's how I do it. Here's how I make sure the data is accurate. Make sure you have that kind of culture developed, and then you can kind of start expanding on it and make sure you start delivering, you know, at least some baseline reporting to whoever your target audience is. Not necessarily so fast that you're wrong, but like in at a speed that makes sure that they start getting confidence. Because the hardest thing, I think, today, especially with people wanting data tomorrow or yesterday, is making sure that they understand that it still takes time. You know, we're still in a world where making sure data is accurate is you know, isn't always easy. There's just a lot of different, there's still a lot of business logic that goes into some systems. Some companies are using systems that are still, you know, you're pulling from IBM mainframe. Some companies are, you know, using cloud. Some companies are using, you know, just on-prem systems. And it's just so many different levels of types of systems you're connecting to and things of that nature that you need to be wary of the fact that data can still be wrong, even though you've pulled it. You maybe didn't include some logic. You shouldn't assume you understand the data just because, or assume that data is 100% accurate just because you've pulled it directly from the data source. There's always some kink in most data sets, you know, maybe how it's appended, maybe how it's updated. And if you don't understand those things when you start out, you're going to get wrong data. So it doesn't, as much as it's very easy to pull data sets in these days with tools that have direct connections to, you know, all of our various sources and then could push it to Snowflake, there's still a need for a lot of like patience and understanding that, you know, you got to understand the data. You can't just like pull it in and be like, okay, here's the data, use it. You still want to make sure it's accurate, reliable, things of that nature. So.
So there's a tweet that Sarah Catanzaro, she's head of data at Mattermark, she had a tweet a few weeks ago, and she said something to the fact of, it's clear that the modern data stack built on the corporate data warehouse with tools for ELT, data modeling, metrics, and reverse ELT operationalization is becoming a standard. How is this architecture, or are these workflows fundamentally wrong? What is your thought around this tweet, or do you have like a comment on that particular tweet?
I mean, one, I really enjoy most of her tweets. So, you know, I think that I don't think I'm going to pretend to know fully. Like, it's like, was this like partially its challenge? Like, I think this is something that I've been trying to do too recently. Is like, there's been so much in terms of, how would I explain this? There's been so much in terms of like kind of siloed thinking and then also thinking or tools that like, I actually posted about this recently where it was kind of like making a joke, but there's a lot of like tools and best practices recently that like are being either pushed forward by, you know, VC funding essentially, right? Like obviously there's incentive for this tool or this process or this, you know, system to be accurate because that means, you know, someone on the other side makes a great amount of money. And then there's also like this, you know, maybe there's like 4 articles about this concept that came out 2 years ago and people are trying to figure out how to do it because they think it's a good idea. And so I think we're just in a situation personally where there is this need to start asking, like, is all of this stuff that's come out in the last 3 to 5 years stuff we should be doing? I mean, one, a lot of it is like, you know, the wheel of, you know, referenced in like Game of Thrones, where it's like, you know, this is on top and that's on top. And we're constantly just like, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, maybe giving it new names. So I think there's that part of it. You know, there's the aspect that like a lot of this has just been all pulled apart versions of more complex or bigger tools, like, you know, in our Oracle and in, you know, bigger kind of vendor days. And so I think it's just we're all kind of at this point where we realize we need to question if all of this stuff even makes sense, how we're building this makes sense. And you know, it's, you know, about kind of, I think, like whittling out all the stuff that's just noise and really figuring out, okay, what actually makes sense? What's the real way of building these systems? So I think that's personally maybe what she felt. That's how I think I translated it. It's like, okay, I think, and this is something I've been trying to do more and more personally. It's like, how do we really start questioning everything that we've been told, or even we believe, around data from the last like 5 years? Because prior to that, like, you know, we had a way of doing data. We, you know, we've had like 3 decades where people kind of like, this was the way you did data. And I think that's still kind of the same on the enterprise level. Again, I think the big change has been more on the SMB and mid-level market, where now suddenly it's like, oh, it's, we can all start doing this. It's not that expensive, until you suddenly sign 7 contracts with that all worth $50,000, then it's a different conversation. But prior, you know, at least at a base level, it's not that expensive and you could possibly at least get started. So yeah, I think that's kind of my own thoughts now. It's like, okay, what actually makes sense here? What doesn't make sense here? There's a lot of, you know, cool names, there's a lot of cool terms we can use for things, a lot of things that are around marketing. But what actually makes business case sense? And, you know, this is why I often push people to like focus on like, you know, your data pipelines, your data storage, your reporting, and then some data quality and observability. And other than that, like all that other stuff is going to be fluff around that. And until you can get those other 4 things right, a lot of that other stuff is just adding on expenses, adding on management, and adding on maintenance that you might not even be in a place to think about. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about that tweet in general.
Any topics, Ben, that you think we should continue to have to push the data ecosystem forward? I mean, I'm seeing your tweets, I'm seeing on LinkedIn, you have such provocative questions for the community to try to get people to discuss these things, to you know, reframe the conversation, to really rethink whether it's marketing fluff versus reality and something that's needed. Like, what are some topics that you wish the community should be talking about a little bit more?
I mean, one, if you think my tweets are provocative, there's definitely plenty of other people or LinkedIn posts. There are far more provocative tweets and LinkedIn posts. I try to stay pretty tame. I'm too much of like a, I think, a friendly people pleaser to want to poke anyone. No, I mean, I think, I think a lot of things are being sussed out. For example, even like the reverse ETL kind of whole game and that thing. I think a lot of those tools are starting to integrate more with the EL or ETL tools or the tools that like are more going to almost become this full sync style tooling. So I think that's something that will slowly start to make more sense, because you know, if you use something like Informatica, that already does things like that. You know, it does both sides. It's not a separate game. And so I think things like that will make sense. I would love to hear more, I think personally, about the metrics layer and people's thoughts there, like where things should exist. And I'd also love to think, like, I'd love to hear more. Like, I think I saw something from Firebolt this morning where they were talking about like raw layers of data and like making sure like, you know, people have access to that directly and things of that nature. And I think that's something that's at least worth poking at. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, those are some things. There's some data storage things, but I think again, those are getting sussed out as well, like data mesh, data warehouse, data lakehouse. I think we're going to keep kind of seeing people try to make it work for some companies, and I assume for other companies it won't work. I think that's kind of how I feel about that. Like, you could argue that, like, to many degrees, Facebook kind of had this data mesh, but we just never called it that. So that's why it's like, I mean, I think it's going to work for some companies. I think it's not going to work for other companies. But I still love to hear different perspectives and hear where it's worked, where it hasn't worked. And I think there's a lot to glean from everyone. I'm trying to like, I feel bad because I'm going to try to start having like some debates about this. And I say, I feel bad because I was like, oh, this is a great idea. I did talk to one person prior who kind of gave me the idea, but then I realized that, I don't know if you know Prakulpa, she's been doing this for a while already. I think she's got one debate coming out here on the metrics layer. But yeah, I still want to do them, but I was just like, I thought I had a little bit more of an original idea, but we're all, I think we're all in this space where we're like, okay, we've got a lot of ideas out there. can we start picking them? Because we're all tired of hearing, you know, different versions of different stories. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, we started with hype. Let's end it there on forecasting and trends. Ben, is there anything else, any other thoughts that you want to share with the audience that's top of mind before we close?
Yeah, I mean, like if we're talking about like trends and where things are going, I think consolidation is going to and is occurring, right? Like we're seeing different acquisitions occur right now. We're seeing tools trying to provide more services, more full services. I think it's kind of unavoidable for multiple reasons. You know, it's better for the products themselves because they hopefully reduce churn that way, as well as it's better for the customer who doesn't have to now have, you know, 10 contracts. I mean, it's always a trade-off, obviously, when it comes to like bundle, whatever, but I imagine there's going to be at least some mini bundling here and there where it's like, okay, this tool is at least a little fuller now. It's not just like one tiny small piece. So I'll be curious to see about that. I think, trying to think what else. Yeah, I think that's kind of the big thing I see for the next like 2 years is like, I think we are going to start seeing more discussions and more like acquisitions and more consolidation in between companies that are different as well as in between companies that are the same thing. And then, you know, between the need for talent as well as the need for customers and growth, I feel like that's kind of an unavoidable thing. We're just going to see more and more things swallowed up. I think it'll also be interesting to see if we'll start seeing more and more outages, because that's something I keep thinking. It's like, well, the more and more we have, like, I mean, Jira like things that happen, like the more and more we're all in one system, the more and more likely someone runs a bad script and suddenly, you know, 50% of the world is down on something. I thought again, that was an interesting, I think, story. I don't know if anyone's read The Pragmatic Engineer, but his takes on that and his kind of breakdowns on that are always kind of great. So yeah, I think that'll be something interesting to see if we have more of as more things are cloud. It's like it's almost unavoidable. It's like maybe there'll be it's just more impactful is when these issues happen. So yeah.
Oh, Ben, thank you so much for your time today and your insight. Nadine, Daniel, you as well. Thank you so much for being with us. For those of you who have joined, you can learn more about Ben and his work by subscribing to his newsletter. That's the Seattle Data Guy at Substack. And you can also follow Ben on YouTube, right? So you can just search for Seattle Data Guy, follow him there. He's got some great videos there. And don't forget to subscribe and share this episode along with your thoughts. The Rise of Real-Time Analytics podcast is brought to you by Rockset. At Rockset, we've built a real-time analytics cloud-based database, helping businesses easily leverage their application data in real time. Check us out at rockset.com. You can try us out for 2 weeks with $300 in free credits. And thank you again for joining, and stay tuned for our next episode.
Awesome. Cheers. Thank you, guys. Bye.
See ya. Bye.
All right.